Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever in the world that is that you happen to be. This is the Web API Design Jumpstart, and alongside Jeremy Lickness, I am Christopher Harrison. Very happy to have you with us. What we're going to do is introduce ourselves. We'll go ahead and introduce the course, talk about what we're going to talk about, and then we'll kind of launch on into a little bit of MVA stuff, and then into, well, the actual content. But first up, Jeremy, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself there.
Sure thing. So I'm Jeremy Lickness, and for those of you who have followed me online, that the mystery solved. The last name is Lickness. It's
Lickness.
50-50. Some people like to call it Likeness, but it is Lickness. And I'm a principal architect at iVision, which means I get to do a lot of really exciting things on projects. I'm everywhere from a developer who's in the trenches working on code to a technical project manager to pre-sales and high-level business solutions. So I've run the whole gamut. And I've been doing this for about 20 years, which used to sound kind of cool until I realized that some people in the audience are actually coming up on that age themselves.
Yeah.
So it dates myself a little bit. I've been focused on enterprise apps for 2 decades.
Okay.
And a few detours. I did a training business for a while and used technology to leverage training. I also dabbled in gaming a little bit, but I've always come back to line of business, and that's been my passion for those 2 decades.
I like it. Perfect. Welcome. I am Christopher Harrison. I'm a longtime MCT, and I'm just going to be really rude here if Jeremy flicks to the next slide. Then we can actually, there we go, have my slide right there. I'm a longtime MCT. I was an MCT for about 15 years. I focus these days on web development and Office 365, and spend a lot of my time, it feels like, in this very seat right here. I actually got started doing technology back when my father brought home a VIC-20, graduated onto a Commodore 64. Oh, yeah. I was the stuff. I got into PCs, realized you can make a career out of this, and, well, here I am, just like that. Now, as we mentioned, of course, at the outset, this is going to be web API design. We've got 6, I think, fantastic modules for you. What are those modules?
So we've got, like I said, like you said, 6 modules. The first one's just a high-level introduction to web API. So my goal with people watching this is if you know nothing about it, we're going to get you situated and get you kicked off. However, if you do know something about it, I have something in store for you in the later module. So after we talk about Web API and what's behind it, which includes REST, we're going to go into basic design and look at how you actually intentionally set up these interfaces with Web API. We'll follow that with configuration. One of the things I love about Web API is that there's a lot of dials and switches that you can use to change that experience. Then we'll move into validation and error handling. That's huge. How do we deal with posts that have invalid data, et cetera? We'll move into security. How do you secure your Web API?
That's
very important.
Big question that I got asked. Yep.
Exactly. And so we'll show a couple ways of doing that. And then we're going to close it out with advanced Web API design. And these are features of Web API, such as versioning. If you have a public-facing Web API, how do you manage multiple versions of that?
Right, make sure that people can actually continue to make those calls, even if maybe you've changed something so that way you're not breaking everything that the world is calling. It's obviously much more complex than just simply making an update to an API inside of a DLL.
Exactly.
So. Perfect. I like it. Now, for those of you that are brand new to MVA and obviously just tuning into this course and maybe wondering kind of what level it is that we're expecting you to be at, we are expecting that you have some level of Visual Studio 2013 experience. We are expecting that you're hopefully at least familiar with the concept of Web API, but even if you're not, that's okay. That I think the way that Jeremy put it to me earlier this morning, which is if you haven't done Web API, that's okay. We're going to explain the basics of what it is and get you going. And if you have done Web API, then we're going to help you take your Web API skills to the next level. Now, spinning this back again to MVA, VA. We actually have over 2.6 million registered users, which is sort of a mind-boggling
number.
Yeah, it's a pretty big number. You can get 50 MVA points for checking this out. You'll notice the voucher code right down there. And I know a lot of people are going to wind up asking that voucher code is inside of the FAQ tab as well. I would also mention that we do, of course, have live Q&A throughout the day. It's only the two of us that are answering questions, and honestly, it's mostly going to be me today that's answering questions. So we are going to do our absolute best to get back to everybody with you know, as quickly as we possibly can. I am kind of going back and looking through the questions that I missed and so forth. But in any event, please do to ask. I would also mention that one of the things that's going to wind up happening with this particular MVA, and this is the first time that we've done this, is we are going to be sort of seeding the forum that will be associated with this, that every MVA has a forum, and we'll be seeding this one with a handful of the big, cool questions that we wind up getting inside the Q&A window. So do, if you do have, you know, some kind of cool things that that you're wondering about, please feel free to ask, and eventually those will become part of the forum as well. And with that, I think we can actually turn our attention to what Web API is. So, Jeremy, what is Web API?
Web API is a lot of things. So let me just intro at a high level. So in this module, we're going to cover exactly what it looks like within Visual Studio and then step back and talk about design for that.
Perfect. I like it.
And then we'll drive into REST and Hate OAS.
Hate OAS.
Yeah, that's the way I always pronounce it. I'm sure it's just HateOAS, but we'll talk a little bit about that
okay.
and how that fits in. And then we'll cover the scaffolding that's actually inside of your Visual Studio.
Yep.
So a very high-level overview of what Web API means for me, a Visual Studio user, is where I'd like to start.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. And so it's really an option for web applications. And when I say that, if you're familiar with the new templates that came out, I believe it was Visual Studio 2013, it might be 2012, but those templates went from all of these different types of web applications that you could start with to just a web app, and then you have several options within it.
Yeah, a couple of people actually asked about, hey, you know, can we also use this to serve up web pages? And the answer is absolutely. And I love that dialogue box because it really is just simply, okay, well, I also want this, check. I also want
right.
this, check. And this is a very big improvement, even for people that are doing web forms. If you want web forms, just simply put in a check and away you go. I also really love that host in Azure option as
well.
Oh,
yes.
But that's a different course.
Absolutely. That's a different discussion. But what's really neat, too, and we'll get into this a little bit, is that change authentication button as well. So there's some options out of the box to do that with authentication. And really, in a nutshell, if you think about Web API, what Web API does is it provides a means to stand up RESTful APIs through Visual Studio. That's it, mm-hmm. pure and simple. And anyone who has a little bit of history, we talked about how long I've been in this industry before, is familiar
with... You don't have to admit it again.
Yeah, okay, I'll stop visiting that. But they're familiar with WCF. And WCF yep. did what we called SOAP, which was Simple Object Access Protocol, right? And there was really nothing simple about it. And it was even more complicated when you had to turn a SOAP interface into a RESTful interface. And
yep.
there were pieces in place, but what I really like is how Microsoft listened to the feedback, looked at what we needed to do with this,
yep.
and created a technology completely based on REST.
Perfect. And you are going to define REST. There's already been a couple of questions. Yeah, we are going to dig into what REST is and start to define all of our TLAs. TLA
right.
is a three-letter acronym.
Yes.
TLA.
Yes, we will.
Yeah.
We will jump
yep.
into all of that.
Perfect.
So let me take a step back, too, and REST is going to drive some of what we talk about, but this is a Web API design course. So it's not just the nuts and bolts of Web API design.
Right. Yep.
Or Web API itself, it's Web API design. So what does that mean? And if you take a look, I mean, basically what we're talking about is there's an intentional approach to building APIs. And what that means is you set out to surface something and then you use this as a tool to make it happen as opposed to starting from the technology up, right? Everything
yep.
we do is a problem that we're looking to solve.
Right.
And we want to solve it with the technology. Now, I would say this is almost a must-have if you have APIs consumed by third-party services, but I'm going to say even if it's internal customers as well, because what we're doing is really looking at a way to be standard. And so there's a very common, easy to understand approach to that API. And that's the goal behind design. And then we're going to dive into all of these topics more deeply when I talk about attention to details. But we've got consumption of the API, standards with response codes, et cetera, security, versioning, RESTful, et cetera. And we'll dive into all of those. But that is really, in a nutshell, what we mean by web API design.
To find REST.
REST.
And so, it's not just simply sleeping. Somebody actually, yeah, REST is what you need at night. Yeah, not quite.
Exactly. No, not quite. So well, REST.
REST is a good thing. I mean, you do need REST.
You do need REST.
Yes.
Yeah, we were talking about REST earlier today, and I got plenty of REST before I came into the studio. I flew in from Atlanta, so a little bit of a time zone switch, but I feel pretty good today. So
perfect. See, because of REST.
Exactly, because of REST. Totally because of representational state transfer. And I think it's cool to know what's behind the acronym just because, you know, how impressive is that, right? You're hanging out with friends. What's REST? It's representational state transfer.
And, you know, what's funny is, honestly, the only reason that I ever remember what it stands for is because knowing what it stands for, I don't think clarifies anything.
It does not. It absolutely doesn't. So I'm going to preface this by saying we are in the pragmatic class for REST. So I'm not going to go into the papers and the history and everything behind it. I'm going to look at it from a very pragmatic perspective of what it means for business. So I'm going to simplify it a little bit, and some REST purists may or may not feel like I'm giving it full coverage. But in a nutshell, REST is a way of creating client-server communications that's stateless, and that's important so you're not tracking state over time. And you're dealing with it as a resource. And we're used to, I think, in older software, doing something called procedure calls. And we had very procedural approach to software. And even as software moved to the web, even SOAP is really a procedure-based type protocol. REST sort of changes that perspective and looks at resources. And a resource is simply something that you can access through a URI, through what you type into the address bar in the browser, if you will, and then allows you to use what's built into the HTTP protocol to act on that.
Yep.
And that's where we talk about HTTP methods. Now, I did throw in there the word idempotency, just because it's always a great word.
Fantastic word. I don't think that word works in Scrabble, though.
Really? Yeah. No?
I don't think so. Yeah, okay. You get red squigglies on it, which I think, generally speaking, means it doesn't work in Scrabble.
Right.
In any event. Yeah, but they let DZA in Scrabble, so, you know, who knows?
Right. Well, you can find it on the web, so it means it has to be true to some extent.
There you go. Yeah.
Exactly. So anyone who's worked with idempotency knows that it's dealing with side effects. And there are some schools of thought around how different REST methods deal with side effects.
What is idempotency?
So it really describes the state of something and whether an operation is going to be repeatable without changing the state or not.
Okay.
So if it's idempotent, and I read this more than I pronounce it, so hopefully that's the correct. Then what you're saying is I can do this same operation over and over, and I'm not going to see a different result each time. So typically, for example, when you get something from a REST endpoint, you expect it to be the same unless someone came in and modified it behind the scenes.
Perfect.
So that's an example. And I will say it's a style and not a standard. So it's a way of doing things. It's not a hardcore. You must look up and see 1.2.3 says do it exactly this way.
Yep.
And the next thing I'm going to step into is something that more formalizes, if you will, how REST is, and that's this HATEOAS.
Hate OAS. Ah.
So that's a natural segue into hypermedia as the engine of application state.
Okay. Sure.
And so this is really what I would say REST embodied. What it's saying is hypermedia is the key. So everything we're going to do is going to be described by the way we interface with these RESTful endpoints. So in essence, we should be able to operate on resources, understand what operations are available, and make modifications and do everything we need to just through the combination of a resource URL and that verb that we act on it. So one key with HATEOAS, if you will, is that typically you return information about what you can do with data sets. So if I go out to a high-level data set, mm-hmm. I'm not just getting information back, I'm also getting location information and operation information, so I know that this is where I go to find a subset of data, this is what I can do, here's how I edit the set, et cetera. So it's really just put some more formality around the ways that you can expose RESTful endpoints.
Okay, I gotcha.
And with that, I'm going to hop into a demo.
Demos, okay. Yeah, let's actually see some code. Let's sort of see how all this comes together.
Exactly. So what we're gonna do is pop over into Internet Explorer, and I'm going to use something. Now, we talked a little bit about this earlier too. So there's a form of REST, and there's an add-on that sits on top of Web API that allows you to use something called OData. And it's a really straightforward, mm-hmm. easy way of dealing with data operations, and exposes it in a standard way. We're not gonna dive into a lot of detail here, but I love this site because it exposes some APIs that we can go through for our demo. So what I'm gonna do is click through to OData Services, and I'm gonna go with the V3 because I'm more familiar with that, mm-hmm. and go into this endpoint. So what I've done right here is I've called a REST endpoint.
Okay. And so you're now getting the results from that REST endpoint.
Exactly. So all the results have come back, and basically that endpoint's the high-level endpoint for a set of collections. And those collections here are products, product details, categories. But what you'll see if you look at this is that, for example, here in this product, so I'm just going to highlight that, I've got an href. And so that's actually giving me information about navigation. It's telling me relative to this service, I can go to a collection of products. And so what I can do up here in my URL is on the end of this URL, I'm just going to append products. I'm going to navigate to that. And now I've got a list of actual products that are in this endpoint. Now this is something neat, and I wanted to show this in Internet Explorer because OData uses the Atom format, which mm-hmm. is a popular feed format.
It's an XML format.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when it receives results, it knows how to format those because it's expecting, this is commonly used by RSS data feeds. Mm-hmm. And so it formats it this nice way. Well, if we want to see what actually came back, we'll go into View Source. And in my Notepad, it's not going to look too pretty, but we're going to pop over to Visual Studio.
Just paste that into a new XML document.
Yes.
Yep.
So we'll go into a new file, XML file, open, and we'll paste that. And then it'll have a nice format that we can see what came back. So what I want to show is what we've got is a high-level set of information about the collection.
Mm-hmm. And so then it's telling us that it's products. Yep.
Exactly. And then within that, we'll have a list of entries for various products. So within that, for example, we have this entry.
Yep.
And just highlight that. And that has an identifier. And you can see this identifier is actually our service endpoint with this product zero on the end.
Okay.
So that's how I uniquely identify this specific product in this system.
And that specific syntax saying that product zero, that's an OData convention,
yes.
Correct?
Okay. Absolutely.
All right. And OData is open data, and that's just a standardized way of making calls to a back-end data store, being able to do things like querying, filtering, and those types of things.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Facilitates rapid development of these types of imports.
Right. Yeah, because that way it's consistent. Because, of course, one of the problems is that you could stand up an endpoint, I could stand up an endpoint, Jeremy here could stand up an endpoint, and if it's all very different things, it makes it very hard for me to figure out how to call each one of those. And one of the things that Jeremy had mentioned earlier was WCF and SOAP. And one of the things that WCF made very easy to expose out was a little thing called a WSDL document, or Web Services Description Language, which was an XML document that sort of described how all the calls were supposed to be coming in, how all the data was going to look going out. And while that WSDL document was good because it did give me the ability to quickly figure out, okay, what do I need to do? And there was a lot of automated tools that will allow me to generate the appropriate classes to make those calls, the fact of the matter still remained that it was going to be different here and here and here and here. And so now I'm having to create all of these different classes. And so the goal with REST and the goal with OData is to have consistency there. So that way, regardless of where I go, if it's an OData standard endpoint and I want to get the product with an ID of 42, then I say products and then paren 42. Or if I want to get the category with the ID of 42, then it's going to be categories, and then again, paren, paren, 42. Now, there's still, of course, going to be some things to learn that I need to know what collections exist, but at least once I figure that part out, I now know how to make all the appropriate calls. That's the goal here, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the goal, and it gives you that feature that you're used to with WCF where you can right-click and add service reference, and it goes out and discovers it.
Yep.
OData provides that capability on top of standard REST.
Exactly. And it's also worth noting that in Visual Studio, if you're doing .NET, that it will even create a data context and give you the ability to do link queries as well. So if you're used to doing Entity Framework, you can actually make those same calls into OData, and then it will automatically translate your WHERE statement into a filter clause, and it will automatically translate your order by into a sort clause, and it will automatically handle your top and your skip and all of that good stuff as well. So yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a way for, I would say, rapid development of data-driven endpoints as well. You can stand up pretty quickly something using OData on top of that.
Exactly. Yep.
So I'm going to come back to this single entry in this list of products and look at a few other options. So we have these link here, and this one says edit. So right away I've discovered that I'm able to edit this product, and it gives me a reference of how I would edit the product. So it's telling me to go to this product's zero endpoint. And we'll get into this a little deeper later on, but I do want to show an example of that edit, and then I can drill down to category, supplier, product detail, et cetera. So there's some more interesting items, and then we have it's bread, it's whole grain bread, et cetera, et cetera. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this entry. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cut that and just replace the whole document. So now I have a single entry for this bread. And I'm just going to edit this a little bit, and I'm going to call it wonderful bread.
Wonderful bread.
And this is whole grain that is awesome bread.
Okay.
Okay, so let's try that. So now I'm going to jump a little bit ahead of myself and use a tool that I will dive into more details for later on. But this is a tool for testing REST endpoints. So I'm going to show a couple different tools for that.
And that's called Postman, and that's available in a different browser, of course, called Chrome.
Yes.
Okay.
That's one way to put it.
That's the way that I'm going to just slide that in there.
Okay. So what I've done here, and let me zoom in a little bit for you, is I've put the endpoint from my Internet Explorer session, and that's this whole tracking ID, OData, et cetera, and then I put this product zero, because in that XML, it told me that product zero was the endpoint I could use to edit. And again, jumping a little bit ahead, but I happen to know if I do a put, that's an update
right,
for this.
And we'll get into those verbs and what put and post and get and delete and all of those mean a little bit later.
Yep.
Patch.
And headers and everything else. I'm just going to show this for the sake of showing it. I'm going to come into this raw data, and I'm going to grab what I changed, paste it in, and then if demos are working this morning, when we click this send, we get an unsupported media type. So it wants Atom XML. And I got this. So let's try to take this. Oh, that's right. I need to put this as my content type. I was telling it what I wanted to get back. And we're going to talk about all of this in a minute. But I'm telling it the content type I'm giving it is this content type.
And that content type, depending on where you are, what you're doing, could be something different. So, for example, it could be JSON, which is a much cleaner way of being able to send data back and forth.
Correct.
It doesn't have to be Atom. It doesn't have to be XML.
That's correct.
Okay.
So, and we'll get into that. That's content negotiation. And that basically gives us a few ways to both request and receive data. And what I'm doing here is it was complaining about my request, so I'm just pasting it one more time to make sure we're looking good. So we've got our entry here, and I'm probably just missing the XML type on top. So let me make these changes real quick. Wonderful bread and whole grain. What I call it, awesome bread before?
Awesome. Yeah, that'll work.
All right, so we'll take this back and paste that in, and now let's fire off this send. Okay, so what I got was this status 204 no content. So what that's telling me is things are great. It's just not giving me back my update. It's telling me, hey, I got it, and mm-hmm. we're good.
So some form of a 200, for those of you not familiar with your HTTP status codes, 200, anything in that range, means that it worked, that it was successful, and then the specific status code from there is going to indicate whether or not something was going to be sent back. And in this case, that 204 simply meant, hey, look, we got it, it worked, it just didn't send anything back. Or to sort of spin this into like a method call analogy, this is like a void method, that generally speaking, when you call a void method, especially one that's going to be saving into a database, if it doesn't reply back, if it doesn't throw an exception, then that's how I know that this was successful. Same exact concept here.
Exact same concept.
Okay.
So I'm going to do one more step and then mm-hmm. we'll conclude this demo because I know I've introduced a lot of new concepts that we'll need to drill into. I'm going back to that products list. Mm-hmm. And now what we can see is it successfully updated to Wonderful Bread, Whole Grain, Awesome Bread.
I love it.
And okay. we did that completely through just starting at that high-level endpoint, mm-hmm. seeing what collections were available, driving into items within the collection. The collection told me I could edit it, so I just put the content back with my edits, and we have a successful update. So
I love it.
This whole class is about how can we create that on the server side and make that experience available. So
cool.
Speaking of which,
yeah.
I'm going to jump into some scaffolding now.
Okay, so this is where Visual Studio can just do some of that magic for you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Visual
like
Studio does a lot. And in fact, when I first started working with this, I got a little confused because there's so many options available. And that's why I wanted to take some time and walk through what the different templates look like so we know what those variations are within Visual Studio. So we're going to jump straight into a demo. I'm going to come back into my Visual Studio instance here. And I'm just going to create a new project. And when we create a new project, this is something I mentioned earlier. And I'll zoom in a little bit. So we've got this project that's just simply a web application.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is going to drill into additional templates that we have. So I'm not worried about the name or anything. I'm just showing an example. So I'm going to click OK. And then this is something we saw earlier where we have different templates available. And I'm going to show you how to use a template that provides a lot of infrastructure that you can scale back from. And then I'm also going to show you how to use a template that puts all of the references in place but allows you to build from the bottom up. So we'll see what that difference looks like. So the first thing I'm going to do is pick MVC, not Web API.
Yep.
But down here, I'm going to include the references for Web API. So I'm just going to tick that checkbox. I'm going to leave authentication the same way, nothing special there, and mm-hmm. click OK.
And while that's doing its thing in the background, it's worth highlighting, you could have gone with empty and just simply selected Web API. Or again, because I talk to a lot of people who are still doing Web Forms development, that if you're going to do Web Forms, you can still tack Web API onto that as well. Just put the little checkbox. Love that screen.
Right.
So simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love where the templates have gone.
Yeah.
It's far more flexible. So what I'm going to do within this application is just open it up and show that there's some controllers and content. What you're not going to find anywhere is we will see that there is a Web API config, and this is the way of notifying the application that Web API is going to participate. However, there are no endpoints, so the application just sets up the groundwork for it, and it's a fully functional MVC site. So if I run this, it's going to spin around, open up, and what we're going to see is that we've got structure for learning about ASP.NET, we can register, we can log in, so there's mm-hmm. some security scaffolding, et cetera. But right now, we just don't have any Web API endpoints. So we'll talk about adding those in a second. So let me go into another type for you and show you another example of how we can scaffold this. So I'm going back into project. I'm picking web project again,
mm-hmm.
only this time I'm going to start with the Web API template.
Okay.
Now, one thing you'll notice is MVC is grayed out.
What's up with that?
So when you use the Web API template, it's going to scaffold some example Web API for you, and that includes documentation. And I'm going to show you how that works in a second, but it needs MVC to show the documentation for the Web API.
Okay.
So we're just going to click OK with the defaults here. Let it spin up. Now, what's interesting, and can be confusing
chugga, chugga, chugga.
For this, is that if I launch This is an Internet Explorer. I'm just going to let it build and run. And it'll wait for the local host, spin everything up. Basically, I've got a very simple MVC scaffold. I don't have registration. I don't have login. I just have this home page, and then I have an API. However, when I click on the API, it's giving me documentation for registering and logging in. So when we cover security, mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about how to use these APIs with Web API to build your own security.
Okay, perfect. So that way I can make sure before people start coming in and saying, hey, I want to create a brand new item, that I determine whether or not they're actually allowed to create a brand new item.
Correct.
Excellent. Okay.
And then what we've got here, so there's an account set of APIs, and then there's a values. And values is neat in the scaffolding because it really just is some hard-coded values. But you can see here I've got a get of API values. So let me just go up to my URL, and I'm going to change that to API values. And what you'll see is authorization has been denied for this request. So this demo ends here. We have no authentication, and we talk about later. But I will dive into to how that works, and we're going to see something a little different in the third template that I show you. But if we open up the source code, you'll see there's a values controller, and it's mm-hmm. just hard-coded values. But it's got this authorize attribute, and we'll talk about that in the security module. If I were to take that off, I'd be able to show you, but we're going to cover that a little bit later.
Okay. One thing I always like to point out with that little screen right there is in the little classic example that it gives you, it's just, you know, returning back strings. But there's really nothing special about the internal code. So if you have your own custom objects, as long as they're serializable, as long as .NET has a way to convert them into JSON, which it will handle by default, that you actually don't have to do anything special to the object, that it will now just automatically do that. If you do want control over it, you can do things like data contract and data member and so forth to control that. But at the end of the day, it's still just basic code. So if you're wanting to save that back into the database, it's very easy to go in and do that. So if you're using, let's say, Entity Framework, if you're using your own custom repository, it's very easy to incorporate that into that code. And for people who are listening who've done MVC, if you took a look at that, you would also notice it looks an awful lot like an MVC controller. And there's a reason for that, that while technically, the code base underneath is different. That change is actually going forward into ASP.NET 5. While the code base underneath that makes the magic happen is different, it behaves the exact same way. So those skills and routing and so forth that you learn in MVC do apply forward into Web API.
Yeah, that's what's really nice, actually. In the old MVC version, we had different types of JSON results, et cetera, that did a similar thing. This expands that, gives it more intention behind the actual concept of building an API, and then gives us a pipeline for doing things. So you mentioned serialization, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about what happens if you have a complex object that doesn't serialize, and how can we manage that. So we'll cover those pieces later on when we're talking about the design. So what I want to do is jump into this project creation, and I'm going to show you the third option for creating a project with Web API. So the two I just showed you are what I call the pullback options. You start with a bunch of scaffolding in place, and then you sort of pull back into your application and show some of the features you want specifically, but you've got great examples, and if you're using that type of authentication and login, it's already there for you. So it's a very nice starting point. Sometimes, though, you know you're going to build everything from the ground up, so you just want the base foundation. So that's what we're going to create. We'll go back into create a web project, and then when we click OK, we're going to use the empty template. And empty does not attempt to generate any type of pages
empty
or APIs.
Means empty.
It means empty.
Yep.
But what's nice about empty is if I'm a web forms developer, I can click web forms and I can click web API, and I can have those two features added mm-hmm. within it. I mean, we could get really silly and add MVC too and have a lot of fun with that. What I'm going to do is just leave these off and add Web API by itself. So I'm going to click OK there. And you notice there's no authentication because I didn't create any scaffolding for that. It's empty, so I have to add authentication in myself. So I'm going to click OK here, let it spin up through the template. And what I get is exactly what was promised, a very empty template. It has enough to register my routes, mm-hmm. which is, we'll get into that in a little bit, but it's how we know how to get from a browser request to the actual controller, but my controllers and my models are empty. So what I would need to do here is add a controller, and I'll just say a web API to controller that's empty. Let's go ahead and add that, mm-hmm. and I'm going to call it values controller. And what that'll do is give me a controller that inherits from API controller. And then we're just going to do a public, let's say, IHTTP action result. I wonder what that is. And I'm going to return OK, new, A, and B. Okay, so that's very simple. Now we'll get into the explanation of what this is in a minute. Is that how I could? Yeah, there we go. New empty array of A and B. So let me click play here.
Chugga, chugga, chugga.
And then we go API values. And by default, it issues the get, and we get the A and B. Voila, okay. Magic. We scaffolded our first web API.
Nice. And if we kick back to Internet Explorer there real quick, you'll notice that that actually just came back in JSON.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. I like it. So here's what we did, is we took kind of a real quick lap around web API, took a little bit of a look at how things work inside Visual Studio. And now in the next module, we actually want to start digging in and start creating some web API applications. But what do you say we go ahead, we take 10 minutes, and then we'll come on back and we'll keep digging into web API. We'll see you then.
Sounds great.